funeral in Berlin. The interrogation lasted 3 days. Kafka didn't even bother to erase it from Pierce's timeline retroactively. Clearly, he was making a point about the unwisdom of crossing internal affairs. Afterward, Pierce left the hotel and wandered the streets of Berlin in a neurasthenic daze. Does Kafka trust me? Or not? On balance, probably not. The methodical, calm grilling he'd received, the interrogation about the precise meaning of Yarrow's love letters, faded memories from decades ago to Pierce's mind, had been humiliating, an emotional strip search. Knowing that Kafka understood his dalliance with Yarrow as a youthful indiscretion, knowing that Kafka clearly knew of, and tolerated, his increasingly desperate search for the point at which his history with Ziri had been overwritten, only made it worse. We can erase everything that gives meaning to your life if we feel like it. Feeling powerless was a new and shocking experience for Pierce, who had known the freedom of the ages. A return to his pre-stasis life, half-starved and skulking, frightened in the shadows of interesting times. And then there was the incipient paranoia that any encounter with internal affairs engendered. Am I being watched right now? He wondered as he walked. A ghost me surveillance officer working for internal affairs, or something else? Kafka would be mad not to assign him a watcher, he decided. If Yarrow was under investigation, then he himself must be under suspicion. Guilt by association was the first rule of counter-espionage, after all. A soul-blightening sense of depression settled into his bones. He'd had an inkling of it for months, ever since his increasingly frantic search in the library, but Kafka's quietly pedantic examination had somehow catalyzed a growing certainty that he would never see Ziri, or Magnus and Leanne, ever again. That if he could ever find them, shadows cast from his mind by the merciless inspection lamp glare of internal affairs would banish them farther into unhistory. Therefore, he wandered. Civilization lay like a heavy blanket upon the land, rucked up in gray-faced five-story apartment blocks and pompous stone-faced business establishments, their pillars and porticos and cornice work swollen with self-importance like so many amorous street pigeons. The city sweated in the summer heat, the stench and flies of horse manure in the streets contributing a sour pungency to the sharp stink of stove smoke. Other people shared the Strasse with him, here a peddler selling apples from a handcart, there a couple taking the air together. Pierce walked slowly along the sidewalk of a broad street, sweating in his suit and taking what shelter he could from the merciless summer sun beneath the awnings of shops, letting his phone's navigation aid guide his footsteps even as he wondered despondently if he would ever find his way home. He could wander through the shadowy world of historicity forever, never finding his feet. For though the stasis and their carefully cultivated tools of ubiquitous monitoring had nailed down the sequence of events that comprised history, history was a tangled weave, many threads superimposed and re-dyed and snipped out of the final pattern. The scent was his first clue that he was not alone. Floral and sweet and tickling the edge of his nostrils with a half-remembered sense of illicit excitement that made his heart hammer. The shifting sands of memory gave way. I know that smell. His phone vibrated. Show no awareness, someone whispered inside his skull in Urem. They are watching you. The voice was his own. The strolling couple taking the air arm in arm were ahead of him. It was her scent, the familiar bouquet, but... Where are you? He sent. Show yourself. The phone buzzed again like an angry wasp trapped inside his ribs. Not with watchers. Go to this location and wait, said the traitor voice, as a spatial tag nudged the corner of his mind. We'll pick you up. The rendezvous was a couple of kilometers away in a public park notorious by night, a French letter drop for a dead letter drop. He tried not to stare. It might be her, he thought, trying to shake 30-year-old jigsaw memories into something that matched a glimpse of a receding back in late 19th-century dress and broad-brimmed hat. He turned a corner in his head even as they turned aside into a residential street. Internal affairs just interrogated me about Yarrow. You told us already. Go now. Leave the rest to us. Pierce's phone fell silent. He glanced sideways out of the corners of his eyes, but the strolling couple were no longer visible. He sniffed, flaring his nostrils in search of an echo of that familiar scent, but it too was gone. Doubtless they'd never been here at all. They were stasis, after all. Weren't they? Guided by his phone's internal nudging, Pierce ambled slowly toward the park, shoulders relaxed and hands clasped behind his back as if enjoying a quiet afternoon stroll. But his heart was pounding, and there was an unquiet sensation in the pit of his stomach, as if he harbored a live grenade in his belly. "You told us already. Go now. Leave the rest to us." His own traitor voice implying lethally spiraling cynicism. "They are watching you." The words of a self-crowned pervert god, hubris trying to dam the flow of history, or the mysterious opposition that Kafka had warned him of. It was imponderable, intolerable. I could be walking into a trap. Pierce considered the idea, and immediately began to activate a library of macros in his phone that he'd written for such eventualities. As Superintendent of Scholars Manson had ceaselessly reminded him, a healthy paranoia was key to avoiding further encounters with cardiac leeches and less pleasant medical interventions. Pierce crossed the street and walked beside a canal for a couple of blocks, then across a bridge and toward the tree-lined gates of a park. Possibilities hummed in the dappled shadows of the grass like a myriad of butterfly wings broken underfoot, whispering on the edge of actuality like distant thunder. This part of history, a century and more before the emergence of the first universal surveillance society, before the beginning of the history to which the stasis laid claim, was mutable in small but significant ways. Nobody could say for sure who might pass down any given street in any specified minute and deem it disruptive. The lack of determinism lent a certain flexibility to his options. Triggering one of his macros as he stepped through the gate to the park, between one step and the next, Pierce walked through a storeroom in the basement of a stasis station that had been dust and ruins a billion years before the ice sheets retreated from the North German plains. It had lain disused for a century or so when he entered it, and nobody else would use it for at least a decade thereafter. He'd set monitors, patient tripwires, to secure his safe time. He tarried there for almost 3 hours, picking items from a well-stocked shelf and sending out messages to order them from a factory on a continent that didn't yet exist, eating a cold meal from a long storage ration pack, and trying to regain his emotional balance in time for the meeting that lay ahead. An observer close on his tail would have seen a flicker. When he completed the stride, his suit was heavier, the fabric stiffer to the touch, and his shoulders slightly stooped beneath the weight concealed within. There were other changes, some of them internal. Perhaps the observers would see, but leave the rest to us. He slipped his hands into his pockets, blinked until the itching subsided and the heads-up display settled into place across the landscape, scanning and amplifying. He had summoned watchers, circling overland, invisible and silent, nerves connected to his center. Fuck Kafka's little game, he thought furiously. Fuck them all. 3 hours in his unrecorded storeroom in the Cryptozoic had given him time for his depression to ferment into anger. I want answers. It was a hot day, and the park was far from empty. There were young women, governesses or maids, pushing the prams of their bourgeois employers, clerks or office workers skipping work, and some juvenile ne'er-do-wells playing truant from the gymnasium. Here a street sweeper, and there a dodgy character with a barrel organ, and behind him a couple of vagrants sharing a bottle of schnapps. At the center of a well-manicured lawn, an ornate stone pedestal supported a clock with four brass faces. Pierce, letting his phone drive his feet, casually glanced around while his threat detector scanned through the chaff. Nobody. His phone buzzed again.
What was the tavern where you fell for me called?
An achingly familiar voice whispered in his ear.
Something to do with wildfowl in Carnegra, the red goose or red duck or something like that. Hard contact in 3 seconds, his own voice interrupted from nowhere. Button up and hit the ground on my word. Now!
Pierce dived toward the grassy strip beside the path as flaring crimson threat markers appeared all around him. As he fell, his suit bloated and darkened. Rubbery cones expanded like a frightened hedgehog's quills as his collar expanded and rotated, hooding him. In the space of a second, the park's population doubled, angular metallic figures flickering into being all around. Time flickered and strobed as time gates snapped open and shut, expelling sinister cargo. Pierce twitched ghost muscles convulsively, triggering camouflage routines as the incoming drones locked onto each other and spat missiles and laser fire.
What's going on? Palimpsest ambush! Hard!
The signal stuttered into silence, hammered flat by jammers and raw random interference. Pierce began to roll, rising to sit as his suit's countermeasures flared.
This is crazy, he thought, shocked by the violence of the attack. They can't hope to conceal.
The sky turned violet-white, the color of lightning. The grass around him began to smoke. The temperature rose rapidly. His suit was just beginning to char from the prompt radiation pulse as the ground opened under him, toppling him backward into darkness.